Once again, we'd like to turn to John chapter 5. John chapter 5. We'll just read the first 11 verses. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there, which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie, and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Again, John is the only one of the four gospel writers to record this very familiar event. It is one of the seven healing miracles that Jesus performed on Sabbath days that are recorded. And the Sabbath day miracles always aroused anger in the so-called religious elite of that day. And our text, of course, is no different. We read in verse 9 concerning this miracle, the same day was the Sabbath. Verse 10, the Jews said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. Verse 16, we see again mentioned the Sabbath day. Jesus intentionally healed on the Sabbath for the purpose of manifesting his authority over the Sabbath, and also for the purpose of correcting and rebuking the religious leaders of that day because they so grossly abused the Sabbath day. Also for the purpose of unmasking the hypocrisy of the Jewish leaders concerning the Sabbath. And I believe also for the purpose of teaching the people the proper observance of the Sabbath day. So Jesus, at least seven times that's recorded, I'm sure there was more, but what we have recorded, we have seven times that Jesus worked a miracle on the Sabbath day. And again, each and every time it stirred the religious leaders of the day. So in this case before us, because it was the Sabbath, there were those who approached this man who had been healed by Jesus, and they inform him, it's the Sabbath day, and it is not lawful for you to carry your bed on the Sabbath day. We see the man's response in verse 11. He says, "He that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walk." We want to take our thought from this man's response. What he's saying is, again, they say it's not lawful for you to carry your bed on the Sabbath day. And he responds, "Well, it just seems reasonable to me to obey the one who was so gracious and good to me in restoring and saving my life. It just seems reasonable that I should obey him." He is saying, "It seems to me that the miraculous work upon me is a warrant to do what he says." He knows more than they do. We see he's saying, he that enabled me to rise, to pick up my bed, and to walk, he's the one who told me to pick up my bed and walk. And I didn't give it another thought. It just seemed reasonable to me that I should obey him." That was his response. It was a response to a people who were opposed to Christ. "He that made me whole, the same said to me." This was his response to those who were opposed to Christ. That ought to be our response as well. Those that are opposed to Christ, "He that made me whole." You don't have to go into all the details of why you do what you do and what the world does not understand. All you have to say is, "He that saved my soul told me to do it. And that's what I'm going to do." That's what this man said. His response is to a world in which the commands of God go contrary to all their reasoning. And this was his response. His response to a world that looks at the commands of God as trivial. He says, "He that made me whole told me to do this." Again, you read verse 11, and that ought to be our life. "He that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walk." That was his explanation for obedience. That was his explanation for the life that he was now living. Oh, that would be our life. I want to speak on the reasonableness of obedience in the light of God's grace. Obedience needs a motivating factor. And who and what the Lord has done is our motivating factor. Our love for him is our motivating factor. But all through the Bible, directly and indirectly, you see that grace and obedience is linked. They're never separate. They're linked together. Where there is grace, there will be obedience. Grace is never a license to sin. Paul spoke much in that in Romans, especially chapter 6. It's not a license to sin. It's a motivation to obey the Lord. So again, we'll look at the gracious act of the Lord toward this man, and we mentioned this morning. But in the count, we see in verse 1, "And Jesus went." And Jesus went. In verse 5, and a certain man was there. Jesus went where this certain man was. That's always a wonderful thing. And Jesus went, and a certain man was there. So we see Jesus goes up to Jerusalem during the feast of the Jews. Again, there were 7 feasts from the book of Leviticus. We do not know which feast it was for certain, but all of the feasts were meant to point to Jesus Christ. And they were meant to prepare the Jewish people for the coming of Jesus Christ. We see that Jesus comes to a pool. The name of this pool was Bethesda. We see the location. It was near the sheep market, or near the sheep gate. The gate, again, through which the sacrificial animals were brought to the temple, which, again, as we said this morning, was just to the north of the temple. It's also recorded that around this pool were 5 porches, simply covered places. And in these 5 porches lay a people who were in desperate need. Many were disabled by disease. Some were sightless. Some were crippled. Some had paralysis of some sort. Some had all of those things. But they're waiting for the moving or the stirring of the water. The reason, again, is stated in verse 4. But of all these people, our attention is drawn to this certain man. A certain man was there. And this man had an infirmity. He had an affliction. He had an ailment. He had a disability. He is referred to in verse 7 again as the impotent man. What that means is that he was incapable. He was paralyzed in some way and basically helpless. Back in verse 5, we see that he had been this way for 38 years. And Jesus went. He went to this place where this man was. And he walked through that multitude of the sick and the diseased. He walks through them. He walks past them. And he walks to where this certain man was. Why? Because he was there to minister to him. He was there to minister to him. It does not mean that Jesus did not care about anyone else there. He was there to minister to him. And how wonderful it is, and Jesus went where this certain man was to minister to him. That happened to you and I at salvation. It's happened many times since. Jesus has come to our place to minister personally to you and I, to minister to us as an individual. You'll notice that most of the recorded healing miracles of Christ are individuals. There are some group healings where he healed a mass of people. But even when he did that, he dealt with them individually. Because that's how the Lord works. That's how he's always worked. So Jesus went to this certain man, not because this man had more to offer than anyone else in that crowd. The only explanation of Jesus going to this man is grace. That's the only explanation you can give. It is the grace of God. Verse 6, Jesus saw. He saw him lying there in his helpless condition. And he knew that he'd been there a long time in that case. He knew all about this man's situation. He knew all about his day. He knew all about his previous days. He knew everything about him. He knew all of his circumstances. He knew exactly what he was feeling. He knew exactly what he was thinking that day. He knew everything there was to know about this man. And yet Jesus reaches out to him. The fact that God, the Lord, knows everything about us and still reaches out to us is a marvel. But that's what happened here. Jesus personally and directly dealt with this man. So there is Jesus, the one who can bring life to withered limbs, bring healing to the diseased, comes to him, comes right where he is. And notice verse 6, Jesus saw him and saith unto him. Notice who's taking the initiative. Jesus saw him. Doesn't say this man saw Jesus. Jesus saw him. And Jesus saith unto him. And in verse 8 again, Jesus saith unto him. And he did so with kindness. He did so with the intent to bless him and to fix his life. So Jesus literally came to where this man was. Literally. To bless, to fix, and to deliver him from the terrible situation that he was in. Jesus, in verse 6, again came to him. He initiated an encounter with him by just asking him a question. Wilt thou be made whole? You ever notice that the Lord, when he comes to us many times, he does so with a question. And it's always a question that will remind us of our condition. Wilt thou be made whole? That very question implies that there's something wrong. He's just reminding this man what's wrong with him. Because we have to see what's wrong with us in order to appreciate what Jesus does. Wilt thou be made whole? Again, this is grace. This is love. This is mercy. And then he says to him, rise, take up thy bed, and walk. Again, stand up, bend over, pick up your bed, carry it, and walk. But as soon as Jesus spoke those words, this man felt something in his limbs, in his arms, and in his legs that he hadn't felt in 38 years. And we read in verse 9, and immediately the man was made whole. He wasn't made whole when he stood up, when he picked up his bed, and when he walked. Jesus gave the command, just like when he said, let there be light, and there was light. Jesus gave the command, and immediately the man is made whole. That is, he now has the ability to stand. He has the ability to bend over and pick up his bed. He has the ability to walk carrying that bed. He's been made whole. The fact that he stood up, the fact that he bent down and picked up his bed, and the fact that he is carrying his bed and walking is simply the evidence that he has been made whole. It's not what made him whole. It was that command that made him whole. It was the power. It was the authority that was in that command that made this man whole. So there he is. He's walking. His life has been changed. He's no longer lying in one of the porches staring at the pool. His whole life has been changed. And again, it was Jesus. Verse 10, we see his way of living was manifestly changed. The Jews noticed this man carrying his bed on the Sabbath day. The very same man that perhaps they noticed before lying on his bed, now he's carrying his bed. It was a manifest change in his life. That's what grace does. It makes a manifest change. And he has left that porch. He is no longer waiting for the stirring of the water. Everything about this man is different. And there he is, walking, carrying his bed. An act of miraculous grace has made a difference in his life. We read in verse 9, the man was made whole. Notice what it says. The man was made whole. It does not say he became whole. He did, but that's not what it says. The man was made whole. Something was done for him. Something was done to him. The man was made whole. We read in verse 10, him that was cured. We read in verse 11, again, that he was made whole. And we read in verse 13 that he was healed. And we read in verse 14 again, made whole. And again in verse 15, made whole. So what we have here is this man was made whole, he was cured, he was made whole, he was healed, he was made whole, and he was made whole. Something was done to him. He didn't just become whole. There was a work performed. And once he learned the man's name, he said, it was Jesus. It was Jesus that made me whole. It was Jesus that cured me. It was Jesus that healed me. It was Jesus. So what we see is, because of Jesus, this man is walking and carrying his bed. Because of Jesus, he's leaving Bethesda. He's leaving that pool area. And it's obvious he's headed toward the temple, because that's where he ends up. So this man walks through that multitude of the sick and the diseased and the frail, the paralyzed. He's leaving that life. There's no need for him to hang around there anymore, because Jesus has done something in his life. So he's leaving that life. A life that he has known for 38 years. He's leaving. No one had to tell him, you know, you don't belong here anymore. You need to leave. No one had to tell him that. Grace told him that. Grace changed his life. So he left that life. Now notice the effect of this miracle upon this man. Again, during his conversation with Christ in verse 7, he said, I have no man. This man knew that he could not cure himself. He knew that he had no one else who could help him. And here comes Jesus. And now we see this man is joyfully carrying his bed and walking. You will never, ever, ever convince me that this man is just dragging his feet, looking down at the ground, carrying his bed. He's filled with joy. He hadn't walked in 38 years. Certainly hasn't carried his bed, been able to. His life is now filled with joy. He's carrying his bed. And the religious leaders who should have rejoiced with him, but instead they inform him it's not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. What's he going to say? He isn't well learned like these religious leaders in spiritual matters. All he says is what he knew. He that made me whole. Again, just like the blind man in John chapter 9. They asked him all sorts of questions. He says, all I know was I was blind and now I see. He just told him what he knew. He that made me whole. And notice those words there. He made me whole. I didn't make myself whole. He made me whole. He doesn't know Jesus' name at this point. But he knows this, he didn't make himself whole. He made me whole. He knew full well it was not by chance that he was cured. It was not due to good fortune. He knew that he did not merit the healing. He knew that he would still be lying upon that bed, helplessly staring at that pool, were it not for he made me whole. He made me whole. He knew that he was cured. If you were to ask this man, are you cured? Well, I think so. No, he knew. He knew. When the Lord saves a sinner, you'll know. And he knew that someone did it. He didn't do it himself. Get concerned when you hear someone give a testimony and they never mention Jesus saving them. It's always, well, I prayed. Or I did this, or I did that. That's very concerning. He saved me. He made me whole. He knew that he was no longer lying on a bed. He knew that he was no longer disabled. He knew that he was no longer just lying there staring at a pool. He knew that he was carrying his bed. He knew that he was walking. He knew he was no longer in Bethesda. He knew that it was all due to a certain man. He made me whole. And when the hateful religious leaders of the day said unto him, it's not lawful for thee to carry thy bed, He simply replied, "He that made me whole, the same." The same. That is the very one, who made me whole. The very one who took away 38 years of suffering. He, the same, he told me to rise and carry my bed and walk. So that's what I'm doing. The one who made me whole told me what to do. He said unto me, "Take up thy bed and walk." What we see in those words is that this man felt a debt of gratitude toward the one who healed him. There's only one who saved your soul. There's only one who made you whole. And you owe a debt of gratitude to that one. "He that made me whole, the same, said unto me, take up thy bed and walk." He felt that what Jesus had done in his life was grounds for obeying what he said. That should be all we need. The one who made us whole tells us to do something. That should be all we need. He made me whole. And he's told me to do such and such. You see, this man needed no other reason to carry his bed than simply, "He that made me whole, the same said unto me." Just seemed reasonable to him. How can that not be reasonable? It ought to be reasonable to us. The one who saved me told me this is the way I ought to live, and that's the way you ought to live. Doesn't matter what anybody else says. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. He that made me whole, the same said unto me, "Rise, take up thy bed and walk." So that's what I did. That's a pretty good explanation. I can't think of a better one. He that saved me told me to do this. So that's what I did. That's what I do. It just seemed reasonable to him. But you see, he recognizes in his life the authority of the one who made him whole. He recognizes that he has authority. He made me whole. He has the right to tell me what to do. That was reasonable to this man. So without leaving any room for his own opinion or thoughts or plans or ways, without any delay or consideration of circumstance or cost or outcome, he simply said, "He that made me whole, the same said unto me." You see, where we get in trouble is where we begin to think. Well, this is what he said, but if I do this, then this might happen, and then this might happen, and then this might happen, and we talk ourselves out of it. But all we need is, "He that saved my soul, the same said unto me." That should be it. We don't need opinions. We don't need to interject our own thoughts or consider the circumstances or what might happen. Just simply, he saved me and he told me to do this. So that's what I'm doing. Well, my family won't understand that, or this person won't understand. It doesn't matter. You don't have to concern yourself with that. "He that made me whole, the same, said unto me." That was enough. That was enough for him. He felt a constraint to do what this one told him to do. He was constrained. He felt compelled. So there he is, carrying his bed, walking. All of that was part of the cure. It's not what led to the cure. It was part of, and it was a proof of the cure. We're to live godly lives, not to save our souls. That's already taken place. He saved us. But a godly life is a part of being saved, and it's proof that we are, that God has done a work in our hearts. So this man who was healed, and it was Jesus, was motivated by the Lord to carry his bed and walk. There was a power that moved him. There was a power that inspired him and propelled and drove him to do what Jesus told him to do. It was a working influence in his life. And that's what grace does. So we find this man, the command was simple. Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And he did so immediately, exactly, without any questions. And I believe he did so continuously and willingly. And he felt a great joy in doing what the Lord told him to do. When you realize that it was he that saved your soul, you'll find it a joy to do what he says. You won't try to find loopholes. You'll just find it a joy to do what he says. That's why we have to often think, he saved me. He saved me. Walking and carrying his bed, and even when the religious leaders rebuked him, none of that was grievous to him. Because he that made me whole, the same, said to me, rise, take up thy bed, and walk. When you realize who it is that's telling you what to do, it will not be grievous to you. I believe that the man, each step he took, his joy got greater. And with each step, there was more gratitude. That's how it ought to be in our life. Most of us, we've been saved for decades. We've taken many steps. And each step ought to cause us to be more grateful. Because each step is a reminder what he did in our life. Each step that this man took was a reminder, he made me whole. And I believe it filled him with a desire to worship, and that's why he went to the temple. Jesus again comes to this man. Comes to this man and he tells him, explains to him in more detail what had taken place. He reveals himself more fully to him. And this man, with even a greater appreciation, and with a greater knowledge of Jesus, he now has a desire to exalt Christ and to tell others it was Him. It was Him. It was Jesus. So now this man who's been rebuked by the religious leaders goes right back to them, carrying his bed, still the Sabbath day, saying it was Jesus, making no apologies for the life he was living, walking and carrying his bed on the Sabbath day, just telling them it was Jesus. And when it truly grips our hearts that it was Jesus, you'll want to tell others. You will not be ashamed to tell anyone it was Jesus that made me whole. Again, this man's entire life has been changed, and now he obeys. The Lord expects, requires immediate obedience. And for you and I, that's just He that made me whole. That's reasonable to obey immediately. The Lord requires unquestioning obedience. You may not know what you're to do yet, but the Lord requires unquestioning obedience. Once you know, you go. You do. You do. And you do so without question. He requires continuous obedience. He requires willing obedience. He requires universal obedience. That is, we're to obey in all things. And what is the motivating factor? He that made me whole, the same said unto me. Grace makes obedience the reasonable thing. The reasonable thing. So when someone asks you, and they will ask, why do you dress that way? Or why don't you do this? And why don't you do that? Why do you do this? You should always bring the conversation back. It was Jesus. Jesus made me whole. And Jesus doesn't want me to do that, so I don't do it. Don't ever say, well, that's what my church believes. That's pitiful. That's the language of religion. But it should be, the Lord saved my soul. And the Lord, the same one who saved me, told me not to dress that way. So I don't. He told me not to go there. So I don't. He told me to go here. So I do. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. Wasn't the pastor, wasn't the church, wasn't mom and dad, grandma and grandpa. It was Jesus. And it was if it was Jesus, it has to be grace, because we can't merit anything from Him. So it has to be grace. And grace leads to obedience. It's just the reasonable thing to do. God help us to realize more and more every day it was the Lord who saved me. Again, I've preached here many times that it just goes through me. It strikes a nerve. I heard it probably 15 times in Paducah when I got saved. It sounds like sounds like an accident. He saved me. We need to train ourselves to say that. When He saved me, that sounds a lot better than when I got saved. He save me. He did it. And because He did it, I want to obey Him. When someone is always arguing against obeying the Lord, you have every reason to question whether that person truly knows the Lord Jesus Christ as their Savior. Because those who have truly been saved want to obey the Lord. And they grieve when they fail to obey the one who saved their soul. God help us to live in verse 11. He that made me whole, the same said unto me. And that's all I need. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.